Good morning and welcome to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. This is Guelph's community radio station, and every Sunday morning we're here to talk about the joys and challenges of family life on the show Family Matters. And we're here to talk about supportive parenting paradigms with guests, adults and children, who are going to be here to inspire and support us all to value ourselves and our children. This morning we're talking about adoption, about what it's like to be adopted, to adopt children, and what that's all about. And I have a couple of guests in the studio. But before we begin, if you have any questions about this show, you can check out our website at www.cfrufamily.wordpress.com, or you can check out the CFRU website at www.cfru.com. And if you have any questions about this show, you can email me at wendy@compassionatesolutions.ca. And good morning. We have a few people here in the studio today talking about adoption, and I'll introduce them in turn. This morning we have Jenny, who is a mom of two adopted children, and she's part of the training program at Family and Children's Services here in Guelph. She's adopted her own children. One was a baby at the time, and the other one was a preschooler. Is that right?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, good morning, Jenny.
Good morning, Wendy.
And we also have Luke in the studio as well. He's also been a trainer resource parent for FNCS, the Family and Children's Services. He has one adopted children and one birth child as well. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. So let's begin to just by introducing yourselves, a little bit about your family. How old are your children now? And maybe a little bit about what motivated you to adopt children?
They're all pointing at me. What motivated my wife and I to adopt children was primarily my wife. We started dating in high school, and one of the things that she told me pretty early on in our relationship was that she would like to adopt children as well as have birth children, and that's something that was a part of her family. So she has two adopted siblings and two birth siblings, and so she said, when we get married — I don't think there was an if there — when we get married, we'll be adopting children. Are you okay with that? and I was. And so for us, it was always a part of the plan of how we would have our family. And so then we were in the process, and then we found out that we were pregnant, and then that delayed things a bit. Mm-hmm. But then after that, we adopted probably a couple years after Ethan was born. So we now have a 5-year-old births child, son, named Ethan, and a 3-year-old adopted son named Marlon.
Hmm. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Luke. Jenny.
I've always known that I would be an adoptive mom very early on, like 13, 14 years of age. It was just something that I knew. And again, that was a discussion I had with my husband before we got married, that this would probably be the way we would have a family, and are you okay with that? And he's like, of course. So we adopted my son, who is now 14. He was 8.5 months old. And my daughter, who is now almost 11, she was 3.5 years old when we adopted her. So there's quite a difference between a baby adoption and an older adoption, as they call it. So different processes involved with attachment.
Okay. Well, let's leap right in there. Tell me a little bit more about that. What do you mean that it's different?
Well, with an infant adoption, you know, you pick them up. They're cuddly. They depend on you a lot more. You can have those attachment ties strengthened early on. When you have a child who comes in who's 3.5, who has had a lot of life experience already and has some trauma that they remember. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not so quick to say, yeah, pick me up, hold me, you know, love me. It's a slower process, and it's a hard process as a parent, because, you know, you have feelings of, wow, I'm not really attaching to this child as quickly as I did to my other child. Is there something wrong with me? Is there something wrong with the situation? It's a whole process that you go through and realize that, you know, it all happens in time, but it's just a different way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm hearing that attachment has something to do with the rapport, the connection that you feel between, like a bond between you and the child. Is that the idea?
Yeah, like, you mean you love them and you hope for great things and stuff, but when you have a child whose body language tells you, like, no, back off, mm-hmm. and you want to rush in and just, like, love them because you know that they've been through trauma and stuff like that, it's a different – you learn to parent differently right off the hop, I think.
Ah, okay. So I'm imagining that would require a fair amount of adaptability on the parents' part.
Right.
To really tune into what's going on and not leap in and not – jump, you know, and kind of, I would imagine it would kind of frighten a child if a parent kind of goes in too quickly.
Well, yeah, and then the rest of the family, right? Like, you know, the grandparents and stuff that want to come in. When my daughter, when we adopted her, she had been with us for 2 months and it was her birthday coming up. And I just remember her first birthday being like a nightmare for her because, you know, the whole family's there. They're buying her presents because it's her birthday. She had never had a birthday party before. And it was just so overwhelming to her that she just ran to her room and started crying. And I had to step in and advocate for her right away because, you know, not that the extended family was like, what's going on, but they just felt so bad. So we had to, like, take each person in individually so that she could open her present with just them because it was just such an overwhelming experience for her. You know, she had never celebrated Halloween or Christmas or birthdays, and we didn't really know that. So that was, like, a learning curve for us right off the hop, right?
So
it's those unknowns that come with a child as well when they're older that you learn quickly. But it's not always what it's supposed to be, you know?
Right. And Luke, when did you adopt your child?
Marlon came to us when he was about 5 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, I would second that. We, in our training, had done a lot on attachment. And now that I'm teaching the pride stuff too, it's a really important idea and it's something we spend a lot of time on because especially with older children, it's something you really have to work on. Whereas it kind of comes naturally to in a relationship if you do have an infant, because you're forced to just to take care of that child. You carry them around and do all those physical things and you do all that kind of that those connections. Whereas when you have an older child, you have to work at it, and it's not always easy because they do have their life experiences that may prevent that. But with Marlon, he came to us when he was 5 months old, and he had been in a very supportive foster family from birth, and we kept in contact with them. So this transition was relatively easy, and he's attached really well. And we've had not a lot of those kinds of issues. So our experience of that has been fairly easy, just because I've heard a lot of these stories about how difficult older children can have going through that process of learning how to attach, especially when they've had former attachments that have been broken and come back to bite them, and they feel like they've that when they form those attachments that they're not going to be forever, that they're not going to be permanent. They fear to attach to another family. So, in our case, it's been relatively easy, but...
Wow. So I'm imagining for some kids, it sounds like it takes a long time to trust. Yeah. Trust those attachments aren't going to just go away.
Yeah, well, typically they say that however old the child is how many years it takes for them to actually feel and find their spot in your family. And I really would have to agree, like, my daughter was 3.5, and I would say probably right around the age of 7, even maybe 8, she totally felt... comfortable and sharing all of her secrets and the worry was gone for her, and she was able to actually relax. And I mean, that would affect her learning and all sorts of other things. And then you just see this explosion of this comfortability and this personality emerge that, you know, you didn't really know was there. And yeah, it's a difficulty, but it's only a difficulty, I think, if parents don't realize that that's the process that's happening. And so that's why the pride training at Family and Children's Services is so important. And I teach the attachment and the loss sessions, and I can share these experiences. Like, my daughter would come find me up and down the stairs. She would come, like, 50 times in an hour, and I'd be like, what do you need? Are you okay? You know, and she just was checking on me. She just wanted to know I was there. And until I realized that that's kind of what was happening, then I started to go and pursue her and say, oh, I'll just be here, I'll just be there. And then she was able to relax, and she wasn't so heightened in her fear of, oh, I'm going to just disappear.
So she would check in on you.
It was hypervigilant. Like, it was a big worry for her.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I find, too, that she bonded to my son first. It was like she had an ally in another child, and I would hear them talking about, you know, her past or whatever first before it was just a comfortability, you know, she just felt comfortable with another child in the beginning. So it solidified their bond really quickly.
Oh, that's neat. So Family and Children's Services has a program called PRIDE. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, so can you tell me a little bit about that program? Like, what is it? What's that all about?
How long have you been doing it?
I've been doing it 4 years.
Okay, so this is just my first. I've just finished one session, and I'll be teaching, I think, 4 sessions in the fall coming up. But basically, it's a program that has been designed for all resource workers. So it's not just adoptive parents. It's also foster parents, kin placements, which is where kids are being placed with a family member. So now, no matter what sort of adoption or resource work you want to do, you now have to go through that program. And there are several versions of it, but usually it's run for over a series of 10 weeks, 12 weeks?
Yeah, I think it's about 10 weeks.
And they're 3-hour courses, so it's the equivalent of a university course, basically.
Yeah, it just prepares foster parents, adoptive parents, kin placements for challenges that they may have. And so it's a government-laid out program, and it's mandatory for all people who are going to get involved with a child. Like, I think even if you're a volunteer sometimes with foster kids, they would expect you to take this course so that you are aware of all the challenges and stuff that come up. So
it sounds like it's pretty supportive of the families, just so that you're not totally thrown off and the rug isn't pulled completely out from underneath you.
Yes, yes. And it makes you think about it really carefully, whether this is something you really want to get into.
So this is done before you actually even have your children there.
Yes. Okay. It's part of the home study process.
And part of that process is to encourage people to think about the decision before they make it, because not so much in the ones that I've been teaching, but in the PRIDE sessions that I took, there were a couple of families there who I think really quickly came to the decision that this wasn't what they wanted to do, in fact.
Yeah.
That it was a little scarier than they thought it was going to be, that some of the issues were a little bit too big for them to handle. So we had two families drop out of that program before they were even halfway through. And I think that may be one of the most beneficial outcomes of the course, because sometimes people do come into the adoption process thinking that it's a certain way, and they're pretty idealistic about it, and they're not really prepared to cope with the challenges that are involved. And even if they're not necessarily serious challenges, when you have a kid who has to go through all that work of attachment, it just means more work from you. It means that somebody has to be around for them a lot. It means that you have to be a lot more intentional and committed about how you parent. And I think that parents could benefit from that.
I'm just going to say.
But it's necessary. You can't get away without it when you're adopting. And some parents, when they come into that situation, they have this idea, oh, I'm going to get to pick my kid and it's going to be this wonderful. They have these ideals. Mm. And when they're faced with the reality of it, they decide that it's not for them. And I think that's good. I think you need to...
Well, yeah, because it stops a disruptment of placement for the child. Like, in the end, it wouldn't be that a child was placed and then, oh, we have to move it out. I know recently, in fact, there's 3 adoptive families, years ago adoptions, that are all breaking down. And it seems to be a problem, and they didn't really have to do PRIDE back then. And so, this is their child, right? When you adopt a child, it's yours legally, morally, whatever, and you commit to that child for life, really. Not 18 years, but for life, like all parents, right?
Right, right. Well, that's I'm imagining that helps people have the awareness sort of at the forefront, whereas, you know, of course, for those of us that have had birth children, we sort of learn it as we go along, or not. So I just wanted to let folks know you're listening to Family Matters on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph, and you're listening to a show on adoption. We're talking about what it means to adopt, both. In a moment, I'll share a story. A lady who has chosen not to be on the show today but has provided some notes about what it's like to have adopted out her own children and then also to have been adopted. And so she's had the experience of both and what that experience has taught her in her life. But we've been speaking with Luke and Jenny about their experiences and some of the challenges. And I just wanted to sort of kind of tease apart what are some of the specific challenges that parents face? Like, what is it? What do you find are some of those key things that people go, oh, my God, I didn't realize that was going to come up?
I think the big thing right at the moment is the openness of adoption. I think that people aren't aware that there is open adoption and that you can have contact with the birth family still, and that can be in various ways. It can be through meeting once a year with the birth family. It can be sending letters and pictures a couple times a year. It could be getting together on Skype or you know, the internet is now involved for privacy, which is hard. So I know that people have a fear of having the involvement of the birth family, and it's not that bad, you know. We've met my daughter's birth parents, and I'm able to say to her, oh, you know, you walk like your dad, or, you know, you look just like your mom, and it gives her a sense of connection to her roots, and I find that really important for all of us, and it takes the unknown a little bit from them.
So you're saying that, I mean, how often do you communicate with her birth parents then?
Well, our arrangement is that we send letters and pictures twice a year. So I'll send a picture of her, Savannah will write her a letter, and, you know, stuff like that. So that there's that contact. The door's not absolutely, like, locked and closed, you know.
Huh. Okay. And you've met both parents, the mother and the father?
Prior. No, we had her, but they wanted to meet us, and we wanted to meet them. Yeah.
Neat.
I think they need to know that their daughter's okay in the world, you know? That's important.
Yeah, and it sounds like it helps your daughter be able to ground herself, like, in her roots. Where did she come from?
That's right,
Wow, that's neat.
It's not the closed, sealed-off adoptions of, you know, yesteryear.
And that's the expectation now, that you will have... that openness is, generally speaking, going to be in the best interest of your child, and that you need to explore, obviously, the amount of that is going to be in the best interest. There are going to be situations where that just isn't feasible. But as much as possible, to have those kinds of contacts so that the kids can know where they came from. They can have those questions and have them answered. And parents, too, something silly like, we have no allergies in my family. So when I gave my birth son his first peanut butter, I really wasn't too worried about it. Mm-hmm. But when Marlon, I have no idea. So we really have to watch those things a lot more closely. So something simple like that you may not think of. If I could call up their family and say, do you have a history of allergy? Should I put this off a bit? Mm-hmm. So those kinds of things I think are important. And they're also important for those kids when they're coming to grips with their adoption. They have a sense of where they've come from, something to go back to. So, I mean, Marlon's only three, but he sits down with the book that he received from his foster family with all their pictures in it. And we still see them, too. The pictures that he has from his birth parents. And he can identify them and talk about them. And he tells he tells people that he has three moms. And that's true, in a sense. And people always correct him. They say, no, you have one mom. He says, no, I have three moms. but he is able to identify them. He can say, I was in that mommy's tummy, and then I stayed with this mommy, and now I'm with my mom. And so, and it's funny because he identifies my wife, Jaya, identifies her as my mother, and everybody else's. You know, it's my, and my birth mom. And so those things are important for him to know where he is in the world. And he doesn't quite come to grips with that yet. Mm-hmm. But when he hits 12 years old, and he's trying to identify who he is as his own person as his own man, he'll have that grounding rather than having to deal with that all then or whenever he would have kind of come into that information previously. So I think it's really important for them to have that as much as possible. And you might have to go looking for it. CAS wasn't able to provide us information in Marlon's case, and we had to go and find his parents. But I think it's important. It's worth the effort.
Wow. This is really opening up my mind to that. Yeah, you had something to add.
And I also think that things come up in the world that surprise them, and you want them to be prepared. Like, there's many times that we go through the checkout at the grocery store, and they'll say, oh, you have brown eyes. He has brown eyes. But your son's got blue eyes. Why is that? Like, little comments. I'm amazed at how often those observations are made out loud to us as a family. And so, you know, you don't want them to start questioning, well, why do I have blue eyes at 12? When, I mean, you know, he's known all along that he's been adopted and, you know, that I'm not his tummy mummy and stuff like that. But because he was an infant adoption, he knows he's adopted, but he always says, well, I don't feel adopted. Whereas my daughter has memories of her birth family. And so they both of them have different experiences, and it's kind of interesting to watch how they integrate through that with each other as well, right? Because we have no contact with his family. I've sent letters, and we don't get responses and stuff. But it doesn't really faze him. But he's a boy. I don't know if that makes a difference versus a girl. But
and he was a baby when he was adopted.
Yeah.
So yes. He may not remember.
No, he doesn't. But he was in foster care too, and so we'll say, oh yeah, that's where I met you, and that, like, we'll drive past the apartment building, and he knows it all logically, but emotionally, like, he doesn't feel it, you know. And so sometimes I'll hear him make comments to my daughter like, oh well, you know, you are adopted and I'm not. And so it's really funny that, you know, I have to then step in and say, well, actually, you know, but yeah, it's their experiences, their memories are very different.
My kids will have that conversation too, where Ethan will say, I was in mommy's tummy, you were in another mommy's tummy. And it's difficult sometimes to reinforce the truth of that, but also the positivity of that. Mm-hmm. Say, yes, that's true, and your mom is, you know, and talk about her a little bit to reinforce that, yes, you have different birth mothers, but that's a good thing, and that's fine, and you're still brothers, and that's... And I think that sometimes that it's really important also to be very clear about I hate the word equality for lots of reasons, but that they're both, you know, equally loved, whatever the situation. And I think it's really easy in those situations where you have one kid, say, who requires more attention than the other, to forget about the other one. And so I don't want to just step in and say, okay, no. To reinforce the adoption as better than the birth experience or whatever else.
Or vice versa.
Or vice versa.
Right.
To reinforce the truth of what's being said there, but also to say it's okay both ways. These are both good things, and there are different ways of becoming part of our family, but you're both a part of our family.
But even as the oldest child, right, in a natural birth order of families, they'll say, oh, well, I wish you were never born or whatever. I mean, I asked for a brother, not a sister. And I'll say, well, actually, no, you sat on Santa's knee, you asked the Easter Bunny, everybody you could think of. And for the longest time, my son thought that the agency was the baby store, because we would just go in and we would be checking in on what was going on with the home study. And he'd be like, yeah, we're going to the baby store. Can't we just go back to the baby store and get a brother? Like, it was pretty comical. So, and I'm waiting for the you're not my real mom kind of thing. I haven't had that comment yet, but I know it's coming, you know. We'll all go through that, but
we're having that right now because we're approved for adoption again, and we're in the process of waiting. And both the boys know that that's the case, and so we're getting orders depending on the day. They want a girl, they want a boy, and Marlon is absolutely convinced that now that he's going to get to be a big brother, so he's going to grow. That somehow when the baby comes, he'll be 6 inches taller or something, because he's going to be the big brother. Yeah. So. They definitely have that anticipation. It's the same in that sense.
Yeah. Wow, it sounds like it's kind of a family affair too when you're adopting in this case. I mean, when you get pregnant, you may not tell the children for a little while because you may, you know, not know that you're pregnant, but it sounds like there's a lot of lead-in when you have an adoption. Like, everyone can have a say. It sounds like it. I don't know. Just
well, yeah. I mean, they can think they have their say.
Yeah.
You know, we support that, too. But, yeah. Yeah, I was given, like, 3 days' notice before my son came along. And so I didn't have that 9 months of prep. I didn't have, you know, a crib. I didn't have, like, anything. There's a process, too. Sometimes you're picked by a birth family for a child, and then for some reason, you know, the judge decides, no, you know, that child can go home, or it's going to go to a kin family. So you sometimes prepare yourself for a child that you think that you're going to be receiving, and it all goes down. So there's a lot of heartache, too. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of having to realize that your plans change. Mm. And that you have to do some grieving through all that. Like, you know, you grieve the fact that you don't have your own children, say. And I just tell my kids that, you know, the big power out there, you know, just made sure that we were all started off in different spots. But, you know, we all made it together as a family, and that's how it's supposed to be. So I hear my daughter say that to my son sometimes. Well, you know, we all started out in one spot, but we're all supposed to be together, Brent. Like that.
And I think that's another thing that can scare people about adoption is that that tentativity, that uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And we went through that. We were supposed to be adopting a sibling group of three. And it was to the point where the foster parents had been contacted, and we bought another house to fit the three more kids. And then the foster parents said, no, we just cannot let them go. They've been here for 4 years. We're so attached to them. And in the kids' best interest, I think, decided to adopt themselves. But that was really difficult for us. You've made these plans. And especially for my wife, become very attached to that. I don't become attached to kids really in the ideal. It takes me to see them and hold them. So I didn't really have the emotional attachment in that way that she did. But it was really difficult. And that's another thing that can be a scary part of adopting is we always joke that the birth is really, really easy, but it's the variable gestation period that's tough.
Yeah.
Because you never know how long it's going to take. And you can be waiting forever, and then you get that call, and you're going to have to go 3 days from now to go and see this child. So it's really... it's tough to plan around, and you have to be flexible enough to cope with that and emotionally flexible enough to cope with that. Mm. And that isn't even getting into the flexible resource parents who who are fostering kids with the plan to adopt them, even though they're not yet crown wards. And that can be really difficult too.
Yeah.
So.
And that's what we did with our first, was we were a flexible resource. And I remember getting a call saying, well, the judge has said that, you know, the birth mom needs to get a parental assessment, and we never know how that's going to go, but you know, and so we're just on pins and needles waiting to hear, like, do I have to send this little guy back, you know, and it's hard. But then it was a 5-year period between waiting to have my daughter, and you know, after 5 years you think, oh, it's just never going to happen, and then you get the call, and we actually had a choice between her or an 18-month-old boy. And so then now you're thinking, like, oh, I got to make the right decision here. And so, yeah, it can be really tough. It is an emotional roller coaster, you know, but that's why the pride training is so good, because it prepares you for all that and it gives you all that information. And you see things through the kid's point of view and through their eyes and how they have to go through the difficulty too. So you're in it together, I think.
Wow. I had no idea that it was such a roller coaster leading up to, and how it's so uncertain. So tentative about even whether or not it's going to happen, how long it's going to take, what the lead-in time is, how much time you've got to prepare to welcome a new person into your house.
Yeah,
and that transition can be brutal too. We had a pretty, because Marlon was so young, we only had a very few visits back and forth with the foster parents, but they would have liked to adopt him, and it was, I've never felt so happy and so sad at the same time as when we went to pick him up. To bring him home with us, and you know, we're crying with joy, and his foster parents are, you know, weeping with grief and trying not to make that an issue. You know, we a very, very difficult emotional time, and when they're older kids, that transition period can be quite extended. They'll come for an afternoon, or you'll visit them there, and that can happen over a period of months. So they have. The children have time to adapt, but the immense emotional stress and strain that's going on in those transitions is also really difficult to manage sometimes.
Wow. And I think adoptive parents, too, like, they just want the child, right? Like, they've been waiting. And when they have to have a 2-week or a 3-week period, a window where they, you know, have a sleepover and then the child goes back to the foster family or back and forth, like, that's hard. But I think that they need to be prepared that you got to think of what's best for the child first. I mean, we're foster parents, and we have lots of kids that come through our door, and my kids are always like, well, why can't they just stay here forever? I mean, you know, I'd have 50 kids by now if that was the case. No.
Yeah. Wow. I'm really appreciating all this information. This is really new to me. And I just want to actually leave it open to people. If you're interested in calling in, you can do that. The telephone number to call into the station is 519-837-CFRU or 519-837-2378. If you have any specific questions for Jenny or Luke about what it's like, if you're thinking about adoption, what that process is like, because that's what we're talking about here on Family Matters on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph this morning. And we're here every Sunday morning talking about what matters to families and supporting each other's needs. So if you'd like to call in, please do. We've got about another 20 minutes left of the show. 519-837-CFRU or 519-837-2378. I want to read to you a story about an experience. This is a mom. I'm going to just call her M for short. She decided to be part of this radio show because she's been on both sides of adoption. So let me read this. This is what she says. I myself was adopted at 5 months of age. I was placed with a family that had adopted a boy 3 years before that, so I grew up with a brother. At the age of 21, I found myself pregnant and scared. Sometimes reality hits hard. I would imagine, as with most parents, mine were devastated and very angry. The baby's father was not involved with the situation at all. After ruling out a couple of other options, putting my child up for adoption was the best thing for him. So that is how I know about both sides. Generally speaking, growing up adopted would be no different than any other family. Mom, dad, brother, etc. looks the same as any other family. There were a few things I found challenging with being adopted. When I was adopted, the only information given to the adoptive family was that the baby is healthy, and as far as anyone knows, there is no known medical conditions in their background. So I found in school, and when making new friends, and they were talking about what time they were born, their weight, etc., I always answered, I don't know. And then I had to explain that I was adopted. I also found some kids would say things like, oh, your mother didn't want you, so she gave you away. Those kinds of comments are very hurtful. For me, that thought would come up on its own. I also would wonder, who do I look like? Where do I get my height from? My eyes, etc. Why didn't my mother love me? What did I do wrong? So speaking for myself only, I found these times very difficult. Although I have given up 2 children for adoption because of the completely different circumstances, I'm going to focus mostly on my first. That was the one that gave me the most wisdom and some knowledge that never would have been revealed otherwise. Once I decided that I would put him up for adoption, Children's Aid was contacted to start the process. Lots and lots of paperwork to be filled out. Background information on myself, my parents, grandparents, siblings, etc. The same with the father's information. Of course, in my situation, this brought up some conflict and a lot of hurt. Having been adopted myself, the social worker told my mom and I that the information I put down about my family was not accurate and could not be used. They would have to get my information from my files about my biological family. So during an already intense and uncertain time, I had to give permission for my file to be opened so they could get my records. This hurt my mom and me very much. She was devastated by that. For me, I was given the choice as to whether I wanted to receive a report with my unidentifying information in it. And although that too was difficult, I decided to get it. I'm glad I did, as it gave me some answers as to where I got some of my traits from. During the last month of my pregnancy, I stayed at a home for unwed mothers. Even then, things were kept a secret. After I gave birth, I was given the choice as to whether I wanted to see him or not. I was allowed to hold him and feed him. We had a very special bond. He was the first thing in my life that I was truly related to by blood. He was mine. He was my son. 2 days later, I left the hospital without him. I felt as if I was abandoning him. That is the hardest thing I have ever had to do in my life. I was walking away from my own child. Some people consider that to be a very selfish act. I'm not sure about that. Giving a child what is best for them is an act of love. I realized in time just how much my mother must have loved me in order to give me up for another family to raise. I'm not in contact with either one of my sons or my mother. I was given non-identifying information on my sons' families, and for me, that was enough. Open adoptions were just starting to surface at that time. I'm not sure if I would agree with that or not. So many people would be affected by that decision. Knowing where some of the traits I have come from was okay for me. For me, the biggest challenge was not having the understanding or support I needed during and after giving up my son. Pretending it never happened and then just forgetting about it did not work for me. Adoption is not a bad word or a bad thing. It comes from a place of pure, unselfish love. Everyone involved in this process, whether giving up or bringing in a child, needs support and understanding, both during and after the process in order to heal. The other point I would like to share is that it doesn't matter if you're related by blood or not. A family is chosen by our hearts. Wow, I was just really touched by that story. Anything come up for either one of you as I share that?
Well, it just, to me, reiterates the fact that, you know, to think about openness a little bit, just when I can say to my daughter, oh, you walk like your dad and stuff, like I'm able to pass on some memory that I have as well. So we do have a link, like we can share, and the fact that, oh, I know them too. And I say that too. One thing too that I was going to mention is it's when you're adopting, it's amazing how many people will say to you, well, what's their real parents like? So I would get that a lot. So what I started doing was describing myself. Yeah, I would say, you know, well, she's, you know, 5'4" and brown hair. And then eventually they'd kind of get the message without me being kind of like rude, because, you know, I'm their parent now. And I agree. I always say, you know, your parents loved you so much. They just wanted the best for you. I always am defending, you know, birth parents, even in a fostering situation, because it's tough. We all do our best, you know.
Mm. They have this phrase that gets repeated a few times through the pride training, that nobody or very few people don't love their kids. You know, they're not doing things because they don't love them. And I think that that's a really important to keep in mind, that birth parents aren't doing what they're doing because, you know, they somehow hate their children. And I think that most of the time they're doing what the best that they can. And to reinforce that with the children, to say, you know, your parents loved you. They loved you enough to do the best that they could. And to say, to remind them that just sometimes it's not the lack of love that's an issue here. And vice versa, that just loving a kid isn't going to be enough to help you adopt them.
Yeah.
We have this idea in our culture that just love is enough. And if I can't do it, it means I didn't love you enough or something like that. And the fact is there's so many other things that go into raising a child, giving them, you know, physical security and giving them that emotional security, giving them discipline and consistency and all the things that kids need. So it's not lack of love. And vice versa, when you're coming into an adoptive situation, if you're thinking, all I have to do is love this kid enough, well, you got that wrong, because there's going to be a lot of other things that have to happen in order for you to be a positive parent. And those need to be in place too. Love isn't going to be sufficient. On the other hand, something I don't think that FACS emphasizes enough, you can do all of those things, and if you don't love them, it's not going to be enough. The love is absolutely necessary, and the kids need to know it. And all the other things you do need to be done with love, or they're not going to work.
Well, because genetics plays a role too, right? Like there's environment and there is genetics. And there, I was going to say too how in the letter M said stuff about, you know, where did I get my eyes from? Where did I get that? So, yes, my daughter came with traits and so did my son. But they also pick up traits that we have too. Like my son has my sense of humor and laughs like me. And my daughter, you know, loves, you know, the arts and arts because I like them and she's been exposed to them. So they blend. The children actually do blend. And they bring with them their birth family and they become part of yours. They're resilient and they adapt more than what we think. But there are situations where, you know, no matter what you do, genetics or trauma does impact this child. And, again, you have to learn to let go and just get the knowledge or the wisdom to deal or parent with those issues that are going to be there for life.
Mm. Wow. This is great. You're listening to Family Matters on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. It's Guelph's community radio station here, run out of the University of Guelph. And we're here every Sunday morning talking about family matters, what matters to families, and supporting all of our values, discerning our needs from our children's needs, and just having fun while we talk about those sorts of things. And we've been talking about adoption today. And we've been talking a little bit about how a family does go about adopting a child and some of the challenges that parents face about just the uncertainty about that whole process, because at any point someone could veto the decision or you might learn, geez, I don't think I've got what it takes to be a parent in that way. So that certainly has come up. I'm wondering...
Well... I'm wondering if we should talk a little bit about the home study process, what that is about to even start an adoption, because I want people to realize that it is a lengthy process and it could take a year to get your home study completed. So you don't just pick up the phone and say, hi, I'd like to adopt a child. When can I meet you? when will I get a child, right? So there's that whole process. So you go through a home study, which means that the worker comes out to your home, couple of times, and they check out your house. You have to go through a medical, you have to go through a police check, all these things. And I remember thinking the first time going through this process, thinking to myself, wow, if I could have children on my own, I wouldn't have to prove to anybody that I would be a good mom. And now I have to prove that I'm going to be a good parent. And I was really resentful of that, you know, going through it the first time and thinking, like, nobody else has to do this. Why do I have to do this? And
maybe they should, though.
Everybody should. I agree. Yeah. I think you need a license to drive. You need a license to get married. You should have a license to parent, you know. I'm kidding, but it's a serious role that we play in society, and sometimes we're not doing so well at it, you know. So I just thought, wow. But then I realized that it really firmed up my commitment to a child, and I realized that, yeah, I'm willing to go through all this. I'm willing to do this. You know, I want to make a difference in children's lives, and so I just those feelings, I think, are natural. So if you're going through the process and you're feeling that, I think, yeah, you know, you're not the first one and you won't be the last one to feel that way.
And then you
do the process. You have to write up a profile on you and your family. That gets submitted. Birth parents who are selecting adoption are looking through these profiles all the time, and you come to wondering, well, why aren't we getting picked? Why aren't we getting picked? You know, there's no wait list. You're not put on an order of importance or anything like that, which I think is another myth that people think. Can you think of anything else, Luke, that we go through for home study?
No, just that on that last point where you get this feeling of why aren't we being chosen, and there's some self-pride worked up in that. But it's really been interesting to me to talk to some birth parents and to see the reasons why they choose. It has usually very little to do with, I think this family is way better than this other one, and I think these people are horrible. And very often it has more to do with, they had a dog that looked like mine when I grew up, or they attend the same denomination that I went to, or something very small. And it seems so random sometimes. And not to get depressed by that, not to get bogged down in the process, because it's worth it. If We've been talking a lot about the things that can scare you away from adoption, mm-hmm. but if you are committed to it and if you're willing to put that into it, it's worth it because there are people's lives who are at stake here. And if you can do it, if you can go through the process and if you can be committed to a child, I don't think there's anything more valuable that you can do in your life than to, you know, to commit yourself to raising a child. I don't know if I can overemphasize the importance of that to me. So yeah, it's worth it if you're willing to put in the time and to go through the process.
Yeah, I think the return is so much bigger than the output. Like, it's just, yeah, like when that child who hasn't wanted you to come near them and touch you, when that child finally relents and gives you a hug, it's a hug that is so meaningful because they meant it, you know. Doors just open, and you always, I've learned to really celebrate the small steps, you know, rather than the big picture thing, you know, just the smallest, you know, the first I love you, mommy, or, you know, is just, it just makes it all worthwhile.
And you may have to wait a bit.
Yes. Yeah.
There's one video where there's a guy that was talking about how when he was 30 odd years old and he called his parents to say, you know, mom, I love you. Yeah. And he said, you know, after 30 years, I adopted them back, and it might take that long.
Yeah.
But, but it's worth it to have that, be able to happen even eventually.
Yes, because so many kids don't feel the love. Like, you know, like I look at some of the foster kids that I'm with, and you think, like, you just want to put your arms around them all the time, and they're just so scared, and they're just so put off. But, you know, when they look at you and say, you know, they come back after they've left your home years later and say, you know, thanks so much, Jen. You really made a difference in my life, you know. It really, yeah, it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how much, you know, time we have to go in these other directions, but I really find that too, when you're talking about you know, the return from it, where I really feel like our culture has an idea about what you get from kids, where it should be, you know, the kid sort of lavishes attention on you, and you know, you sort of live your life out through the kid, and they do all the things that you wish that you could have done. And I think this makes us bad parents even to birth children. Whereas if we're able to take those other things and to see the positivity in that, to say, I don't need my kid to be a superstar hockey player or to be a star violinist or to be whatever right. I want them to be. I need them to be moral, ethical human beings. That's what I want them to be. I want them to be people who can love and who can, you know, be emotionally responsible. Then when you see those steps, that's so encouraging. And those are things I think we need to value.
Right, yeah.
That would be a whole other show, I think.
Yeah, I would agree, yeah.
Okay, no, that's great. Good to know. Is there any other things that people need to know if they wanted to go ahead and start the adoption process?
I think you need to come to an information night and hear what's going on and, you know, not be discouraged. Like, you hear a lot of the negatives of, like, oh, well, you know, this could happen, or, you know, they run away, or they whatever. But there really is more success, and it's just like in the paper. When something goes wrong, we hear all the bad things, you know, oh, well, these foster parents did this, or, oh, these adoptive parents did that. Mm-hmm. We never hear the feel-good stories, mm-hmm. and there are so many of them. You know, and there is support. There is a lot of support groups after the fact. So there's an adoption support group. There's always monthly meetings at the agency, you know, for kinship placements or foster parents. Like, there is help. You're not in it alone. You're not in it alone.
And in that same vein, I think you need to be clear of your support network going in. This is going to be a way more difficult process if you're cut off from your family and you don't really have any connections in your community and you're both trying to work a lot. And this is going to take time and it is going to take effort. And you need to make sure that your family's on board. You need to make sure that your friends are on board and that they, because, I mean, I have the benefit of having a mother-in-law who lives with me and a brother-in-law who lives with me, and having those people in our family unit is really helpful. And then a community around me that's pretty strong. We lived right downtown, and we know all of our neighbors, and they come and they hang out, and we have a church community just down the road that's very supportive. And those kinds of things can really make the difference when you do have those tough times. If you have somebody to call and say, I need someone to come and back me up here for a second, I'm losing my mind. So to consider that going into as part of your decision, do I have those kinds of supports in place? Because I do think that they can make all the difference.
And that was something that Em even brought up, you know, that have the support for the family who's adopting and the other family who's also sharing their child with that other family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And be realistic kind of about your expectations too. Like, you know, there's no perfect child out there, and, you know, these kids, adoption in itself is a trauma, and so there is going to be like they come with a suitcase, right? Like they come with a suitcase full of things in their suitcase, and it could be trauma, it could be neglect, it could be abuse, it could be a good experience too, you know. But we also have stuff in our suitcase that we can equip us, you know, like we have research and internet and family and support and stuff like that. So you can do it. And I think that being adaptable to different things as well, because sometimes the plan just doesn't go exactly as it says it's going to go. And just to be open-minded that, yeah, okay, so, yeah, our adoption's not going to be finalized for 6 months. We thought it would be, you know, 3 months. Just things like that come up. And you will feel that you have a revolving open door, because you will have your family worker, you will have a child's worker, you will have an adoption worker, you will have maybe a special resource worker because your child has a learning difficulty, or, you know, is a little slow on walking or whatever. So you have all these people that come into your house, and instead of feeling overwhelmed by it, just feel that, oh, well, I'm just part of a team, you know, we're just doing what we can for the child. And yeah, so there's lots of.
And not to wait till there's a crisis before you contact that team. I think a lot of time we're so determined that we're going to do this on our own that we're not willing to look for help until it's too late.
To kind of schedule the help.
Yeah, and I don't just mean this in terms of adoption. I would say this about every relationship you have in your life, as a parent of your birth children, as a spouse, as whatever. By the time a relationship gets in crisis, that's not the time to go about looking for help. We need to be paying attention to those things along the way and making use of our support networks along the way, so that we can build healthy relationships that, you know, don't hit that crisis point.
And not feel that you're not being able to parent, right? Like it's the parents who don't ask for help that are parenting, right? Like it's so to not feel that, oh, if I ask for help, oh no, they're going to take the child away, or, you know, we can't do it. No, they're really there to really keep the family unit intact and to support you.
It is an illusion, a culturally fostered illusion, probably the most harmful one that I see on a daily basis, that you can get through your life on your own. It is absolutely an error. You require the people around you to be healthy, to be human. And so it's no failure to make use of those resources around you to invest yourself and receive from that community. In adoption, no less than anywhere else.
I like that. I think that's kind of how we're going to end the show today, as we've got a few minutes just to wrap up, that it's not a failure to use resources and to tap into your support system. Know who they are, set them up ahead of time, and make it somewhat an automatic thing so that you're not waiting until crisis to use them. And the other thing that came up when I was hearing you, Jenny, is that there's no perfect child. And I'm imagining, too, because in previous shows, this is what's come up, is there's no perfect parent. So
right.
Being compassionate to ourselves as we go through this process, which, of course, brings in the whole idea of support to be able to do that. I am so glad I had both of you come on the show. It's really opened up my heart and my mind to what some of the challenges are to adoption. And some of the joys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, and how you can overcome those challenges so you can just have these wonderful relationships with your kids. Sounds like it's been a very positive experience for both of you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it has.
Yep. I'm a better human being because I have children, but also because I'm adopted, I think.
Yeah.
It pushes you outside of yourself.
And they teach you, right?
Mm-hmm.
They teach you.
I love that. So thank you so much, Jenny.
Thank you.
And Luke.
Thank you.
And thank you, Em, for sharing your story as well that we read earlier on the show. This show, we meet every Sunday morning from 8 until 9 a.m. Every Sunday morning, that's Eastern Time, here on CFRU 93.3 FM. That's the Guelph's community radio station out of the University of Guelph. And we're here to talk about what matters to families. Next week, we're talking about mindful parenting. And starting in October, the very first Sunday of every month, we're going to have a call-in show for people to call in and get some of that support that we've been talking a little bit about. You know, people can share their troubles and we can unpack what that means and what's important to people when they call in. So that's going to be coming up at the first Sunday of every month starting in October. So be sure to keep in mind our phone number here. It's 519-837-2378 or 519-837-CFRU because we're here and we want to be able to support you. And Jenny wants to tell us one other thing, too. We have about 55 seconds about a program that she's offering. We've talked about the Family and Children Services, but she also offers Power to Parent programs as well for parents.
Yeah, the Power to Parent program is about attachment parenting. And if you want information, you can go email me. It's jennyemerson7@googlemail.com. So it's jennyemerson7@googlemail.com.
Great. And why would parents want to participate in the program?
It just gets you to see things through the child's point of view and how attachment actually really works and how you can foster those attachments all through the ages, not just from infant, but right up through the teens.
Excellent. I like that. I'm glad you interrupted me to get that in. That's wonderful. Thank you so much.